Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are here today in the studio at KCPW. Jim DeBacchus is not here, but sitting in for Jim DeBacchus is former State Senator Steve Urquhart. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Nice to have you. Love you. You got a radio voice. You'll fit right in with this program.
Thank you.
And on the political right, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie. My radio voice
is here. Guys, we're going to start right at the top with bear's ears. We joke about how we always have to talk about bear's ears on both sides of the aisle, but in the past week, we've seen the Zinke recommendations, Secretary of Interior. We've seen these maps that Governor Herbert and the state have helped prepare. I had this interesting experience where my daughter sent me a text with a frowny face. And, you know, you never like to get texts from your kids with a frowny face. You think, car accident, bad test, what is it? She didn't like that. They were going to reduce the boundaries of bear's ears. It's just a sensibility my son and daughter have.
So at what point do you look in the mirror, Natalie, and say, what have I done wrong? I have raised a liberal. When does this happen?
It's a longstanding thing in our family because we argue about this one a bit.
Okay.
So, but Steve, you are an expert on public lands. You used to represent Washington County and other, how many counties did you have in your Senate district?
Well, I had one county, but as a lawyer, I represented all 29 counties on public lands issues at some point in my legal career.
So to give our listeners a sense of what's going on here.
Okay, so Congress, they delegated some of their authority to the executive branch saying, go ahead and designate monuments. And what it talks about is the smallest amount of land possible for this. Now, really, that doesn't...
Like to protect the asset that you're doing this stroke of a pen for.
Yeah. And so I think the original intent was some small amount of land, but here we're seeing monuments, you know, over 1 million acres and, you know, millions and millions in Alaska. And so I think there's room for victory for everyone on this. Now, if it's just a trophy on the wall and you need the biggest buck or you need whatever it is on your wall, then, yeah, you're going to want to defend every acre. But I think that there's the possibility here. You know, there wasn't a lot of science that went into this in the first place. Let's admit that. And so there is the possibility to protect the wonderful, pristine, irreplaceable values of this area, and they should be protected. I think Utahns overwhelmingly are in favor of protecting those things. But also you can probably release some of the acreage for multiple use.
Mm-hmm. Dan, it would be nice if coming out of this there could be more common ground. I think that's unlikely, but Steve makes the point that you could trim off some things and maybe get both sides a little bit happier.
Well, and that's the interesting element about this, right, is when you have this stroke of the pen, you can set aside millions of acres with a little bit of thought. I'm not going to say the Obama administration did no thought. I would argue that the Clinton administration with Grand Staircase Escalante did much less thought, much less public groundwork as far as when you compare the two. However, when one faction walks away from a negotiation and is screaming victory, you have to wonder if both sides were respected in the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting now because, and this is the problem with the Antiquities Act, is now you have a new president and it's subject to review, I guess, and this will be a litigated matter. I am certain of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, all executive orders have been reviewable, and so you can see where it can be analogous to that. Now you're going to have the other side saying we won.
Yeah.
And so
and the trophies are going to be put on shelves and
yeah,
they're not going to solve
so
problems.
So I wonder, are we actually done with this argument or a discussion? Or are we waiting for the next Democratic president to come in and add more acres, you know, double
yeah,
the land?
Just a sign of dysfunction.
This is not. Yeah, that's right. This is not a positive way forward. A positive way forward is honestly what Representative Stewart and Representative Bishop have brought forth in Congress, which is let's trim back the Antiquities Act. Let's require validation by the states and inclusion in their arguments. But let's also agree to some boundaries. And that's what Representative Bishop brought forward.
Whether it has been chopping down trees, damming rivers, designating monuments, or undoing monuments, the West has never been known for balance.
Yeah.
Never.
Steve, did you support the Public Lands Initiative?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I'm shocked that Congress isn't pulling back some of the authority it designated to the executive.
Uh-huh.
If I were Rob Bishop, I'd say, look how hard it is to pass legislation on this. We worked and worked and worked. Yet the president, you know, basically stroke of a pen did this.
Yeah.
Did we really intend for it to be that easy for the executive to do?
Yeah. Okay, so let's go to another Washington issue, but has a very much a local tie. John Huntsman Jr. has his Senate hearing this week. It seems like he got off lightly, Dan.
Yeah.
He was polished as ever. I've just heard a couple of radio, you know, quotes of him, and he sounded like that vintage, you know, diplomat.
Yep.
Is so well-spoken and represents our state so well on the international stage.
Well, and if you think about President, if you think about the president's pick of John Huntsman Jr., it's kind of an easy pick. He's got a former Republican governor who was appointed by the Obama administration to be a diplomat in another country. And it was one of our most complicated relationships with China. And so why not, as a Republican appointee, bring him across and have him deal with Russia? It's really easy, I think. This is his easiest appointment of all of them, and probably the most credible is John Huntsman Jr.
Steve, do you remember where you were when you heard that John Jr. had been picked for this post?
No, I don't. But I remember I was wowed by it and proud of him, proud of the choice. I'm surprised that none of the controversy surrounding President Trump is trickling off onto John and this appointment. But I'm just so proud of him, and he's proven himself over the years. And I'm glad to hear that we can at least agree that a great person, great ambassador, should get this job.
But it can't. How can they argue that he's not trustworthy when the Obama administration before them had trusted him?
Yeah.
Right? It's hard to, I don't know.
You know, I had the interesting thing at the David Eccles School of Business where we had Governor Huntsman on a executive summit agenda right the I think it was the day that he was appointed. And he came. And it was just such a it was just a really tender moment to have this newly nominated ambassador come and tell us the story. And it's a great Utah story for us.
Yeah.
So another great Utah story, Jason Chaffetz cooking pancakes, Dan. Did you see this on Fox and Friends? Does this sound like our former congressman?
Sure.
It does, doesn't it?
It really does. It kind of fits.
The cot,
the whole
chips
MO.
And salsa.
Yeah, that's right. Simple, regular guy.
You know, I'm just ready for him to bake the gay cake. That's let's bring that on.
We're going to talk about that in our second segment. Did you ever meet, Steve, with Congressman Chaffetz in his office in D.C.?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Many times.
So, like, what do you have on the wall that you would share with our listeners? I'm going to see if you think of the same thing.
Well,
it was blue.
Well, he had a lot of BYU stuff, but he had a lot of Fox coffee cups, all sorts of coffee cups. Jason Chaffetz as a human being, I like him, and he's engaging and stuff. Even when he was a kicker at BYU, my brother and I, we used to try to simulate how fast is it from the time his foot hits the ball till that helmet comes off so we can see his face. I mean, it was like, I don't know any human with reflexes faster than that. But it's a pretty face, and now it's going to be a TV pretty face.
Yeah, it's fun. I remember meeting with him and seeing his football jersey framed, you know, above the couch, and then the screenshots of his family going by on his computer, and I thought, this guy knows PR.
Oh, he's
Dan, do you want to close that out?
That he does know. If there was someone who understood promotions, it's definitely Jason.
Cooking pancakes on Fox and Friends. So, hey, in our next segment, we are going to talk about Senator Mike Lee, the LDS Church, and 22 of 25 Republican state senators supporting the baker and the florist who denied service to a gay couple for wedding. Steve, you're an expert on this. You carried the non-discrimination law bill, right?
Yep,
on the legislature, so it'll be good to hear from you, and Dan will get your take. So stay tuned. Natalie Gochner, Steve Urquhart, and Dan McKay on Both Sides of the Aisle.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
Steve Urquhart, filling in for DeBacchus, so anything I say, I will say, comes from DeBacchus and progressives.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Steve, it's nice to have you, and you have you're a moderate on some things, you're really conservative on others, and you're quite liberal on other things. So you fill in quite nicely, however you want to fill in.
I'm a utility player.
Wow. Utility player on both sides of the aisle. I want to talk about the baker, Denver, Colorado, I believe I have it right, that refused to provide a cake to a gay wedding. He was a conscientious objector, private right to discriminate, as you have said, Steve. The counter argument is that he's in a business that's serving the public and he has to comply with state non-discrimination laws. This is a really interesting case. Give us more color commentary on that, Steve.
Yeah, really interesting. This is no doubt a sincere belief. He will sell any cake he has to anyone. However, his custom cake baking he will not do for gay marriages, nor will he do them for Halloween-based things. So this is someone who no doubt this is his sincerely held religious belief. Now, my concern is that if someone can circumvent, avoid, whatever word you want to use, civil rights laws because of something going on in their head, whether they call it religion or whatever, this just blows a huge hole through civil rights laws. Yes, these laws have meaning. However, any time you come up against that one person who's going to discriminate against you, they can say, well, it's my religion.
Yeah. Dan, you know, give us the legislative kind of angle on this, where we had so many state senators come out and what they became a part of the amicus brief or whatever.
Yeah. So you saw 22 of 24, Republican senators in the U.S. or in the Utah Senate that came out supporting the amicus brief from Sutherland and from the LDS Church. And
are they all? They're not all lawyers. They just decided as legislators. We're want throwing to show
our,
that we're
throwing our two bits into the wrong side of history. So to me, it was really, really interesting, though, that there was the bragging about 22 of 24 GOP senators, but no mention of the House and how much support came out of the Utah House of Representatives. And I don't know really, I haven't polled my colleagues. I don't know where they're at on the issue or where they feel about it. But I just thought it was really, really interesting that there was nothing from the Utah House or zero. Nothing talking about. So, and I can think of at least five that I know would sign on to it just because they were asked to. I mean, Representative Christensen, LeVar Christensen, would sign on it just because Amendment 3 was his thing. And so, but I could think there were several others that would probably be there as well.
Well, I'll tell you the irony on this is.
And you've been in both bodies. You were in the House and the Senate, so you'd be a good person to comment.
Yeah, very, very proud of both. And, you know, the House typically, they stand for election every 2 years. They are more responsive to the electorate than the senators. That's just the way, by design, senators stand every 4 years. And so I think this is one where the House, they are more in touch with the people of this state. The people of this state, they're tired of it. I mean, the same-sex marriage issue has been decided. Let's move on. I'll tell you the irony here is you have a group of state senators. What they said is, no, this should be an issue of balance. Well, where do we go to balance these issues? We go to legislative bodies. And so what they're doing is they're telling the court, now these are people who say they oppose judicial activism, they're saying, court, save us from this dang Colorado legislature. The Colorado legislature, they balance things, and they think that public accommodation laws should not only apply to race, religion, gender, some of these other things, it also should apply to sexual orientation. Save us from the way they balance that. Well, where do we balance policy? It's not in courts. It's in legislative bodies.
Yeah,
you would think so, Steve, but legislative bodies tend to be reactive and they tend to be the voice of the majority, right? And so rarely do I see legislative bodies being out in front of an issue like this, unfortunately. I mean, your legislative career, you're always pushing the legislature to look at different things. Some, I would say many of Steve's initiatives made people uncomfortable. The death penalty debate, which was kind of Steve's last, Hail Mary thing that he did when he was leaving the legislature, was a very, it was a window in time. He was able to get it out of the Senate and get into the House, and we had all this debate. But I would argue that legislative bodies, while they are good at balancing policy, they usually break on the voice of the masses and on history. Whereas the courts tend to be more forward-looking and tend to, in my mind, tend to push public policy forward, which is why you always hear the legislatures across the state and in the country complaining about how terrible the courts are.
They don't like
because they don't reflect the masses. But then you look at like the Obamacare issue, right? They were pushed forward on this whole deal, the legislature was. And then here when the courts rule in favor of it and then the legislature has a chance to do away with it, what do they do? Fall on their faces.
Yeah.
Because in the most part, the legislature has decided now at this point that it's probably a good idea or they feel like it's a good idea, whatever it might be, or certain elements.
Steve, you have one more comment here.
Yeah. I mean, here's the difference. The court, they are more progressive when you're looking at how does the Equal Rights Amendment affect this thing. But here, you're talking about how do constitutional rights balance? You have two very important rights here. You have equal protection. You have the First Amendment, freedom of religion. And so where competing rights touch up against each other, and that's every right balances against every other, that absolutely has to be decided in the policy arena. I mean, this is just, it's really a bizarre legal argument that I hope the court doesn't go for, saying, but this right is super special, so we're not going to allow public policymaking bodies to decide it. This is the trump card. The you call it religion, it trumps every other constitutional right that is out there.
Yeah, interesting. I just want to flag for our listeners the House editorial that the Salt Lake Tribune did on this topic. I thought it was so well crafted. It's called Mormon Church Needs to Love Louder. And you know where that reference is coming from because they, I guess, made a donation. Is this right, Steve, to the LGBTQ fundraising concert?
They supported. They
Love Loud Festival.
We love this. Members, folks, go attend.
Yeah. So the Tribune started out their opinion piece by saying, quoting the LDS Church, and this is the LDS Church speaking, "We join our voice with all those who come together to foster a community of inclusion in which no one is mistreated because of who they are or what they believe." And then they go from there to talk about, so what is going on? And, you know, give it a title like You Gotta Love Louder.
You know, the church, they obviously have a huge, important role in the policy of the state on this issue. And right now, they're kind of one step forward, one step backwards. They're searching for this way. This issue is their way. This issue is moving so fast. I think they'll get there. And it's just kind of interesting watching where they are, where the members are. And this is a very important issue to Utah.
Yeah, something that you're going to hear more about. Listen, I have been really interested everywhere I go as a, let's say I'm talking about the Utah economy or just in my role as a associate dean at the Eccles School. I'm always asked about Operation Rio Grande. People are really interested in it.
Oh.
I was in St. George today.
Yeah.
You know, I was up on campus today. And they asked the question, you know, how's it going and is it working? What are you guys seeing? So, of course, this is the homeless
services. There's a lot of activity.
The road is closed.
Right? Yeah. There's so much
more visibility. Lots of arrests have been made.
So much more visibility to this issue than has been there for the last 5 years. And so is that good? Is that bad? I think the activity is good. The awareness is good. The execution, I still, you know, we have little things that we're trying to maneuver around. I still don't think anyone in the country who is dealing with a large and growing homeless population has any answers that actually work.
Hmm. Yeah.
Steve,
what would you add?
Well, okay, the summertime population at Rio Grande was around 3,000. The winter population was about 1,000. What does that tell you? That tells you that 2,000 people had some options.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just homeless folks. It wasn't just the drug dealers there. It really is a lot of people who were coming here to party. A lot of people freak out when they hear that, but those 2,000 had options. They were coming up from Utah County, coming down from Weber and Davis counties, because there they were being arrested for certain things. So this is where the action was. It's where the party was. So, I agree. It would have been great to have the treatment, but you've really sorted out a lot of the population. I think this article really missed it where they're saying, oh, there weren't bad guys who were arrested, because the worst of the worst, they took off. They went elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the folks who were here partying, they went elsewhere. Now, you have had some spidering of folks who they've just gone to other areas, but they're going to come back for the services. Let's get treatment going in a hurry. We haven't done anything real if we haven't started the treatment. But you know what? Saturday mornings, I would go and pick up needles before the farmer's market, and I got fired from that volunteer job because there are no more needles to pick up. So something is happening. Let's get the treatment and make sure that it's a good long-term thing.
Yeah, interesting. I've been interested in the dynamic of, so Operation Rio Grande happens, and so the homeless population gets dispersed, and all of a sudden other communities are complaining about it,
mm-hmm.
as if homelessness starts and should stay in Salt Lake City.
I know.
I find it really, you know, like if you're on a path towards homelessness and you grow up in Holiday, Utah, you're going to come to Salt Lake.
Well,
you know, you're not
going
to stay up on 23rd East
point,
in the middle of nowhere.
When we've been negotiating this for the past 2 years and trying to look at options, you know, we've had Pamela Atkinson up at the legislature for several years talking about this issue. But guess what happens? Every time we talk about funding or every time we talk about a new initiative or trying to move something or move the needle on the issue, what always ends up happening is – You got guys from Washington County. You got guys from Utah County. You've got guys from south part of Salt Lake or north part of Davis and Weber who say, you know what? We don't have this problem. This isn't our problem. This is someone else's problem. Let Salt Lake City deal with it. It's a local issue. And as the speaker has highlighted, and remember—
That's when you start buying bus passes to get them back to Provo.
Well, and isn't that really what's happening? I mean, at the end of the day, by squeezing in the balloon, it is going other places.
Yeah, yeah.
But remember, the speaker, and people castigate it, and I'm working in the Draper mayor race. I'm out knocking doors on behalf of Mayor Walker. Because the man is a hero in a lot of respects, right? Because at the end of the day, he acknowledged once something that none of the other mayors in all of Salt Lake County was willing to accept, that this problem isn't just a Salt Lake City problem, it's a Draper problem.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of big head thinking was important, but watch how he was castigated. That was the speaker's point, and now you see it.
Yeah.
You see it spreading throughout
the state. So the other question that I always get asked is, are we a destination for homeless people? Is Salt Lake City bringing in people not from other communities but from other states? And your point, Steve, would say that there's some of that going on.
Yes.
We're a crossroads. We're a generous state.
It's really much more people coming from other parts of Utah. I mean, to Dan's point, St. George, Washington County, they still have issues. Everyone needs to remember that. A lot of their treatment money and their money, it is coming to Salt Lake. They still will have their issues. But what happens if you're in Logan, if you're in St. George, and someone has an issue? The only free treatment beds are in Salt Lake. So they get sent up here. They do. And the point is for treatment. But if they wash out, which most people do one or two times, they're not going back to St. George or Logan.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I help clean up the syringes is I work with Utah Harm Reduction Coalition, Syringe Exchange. And talking with Mindy Vincent, who runs that, she knows these people. She talks with them. I'm going to have to believe her on this. I would think we have imported some of the problem because of when people are saying, we have it figured out. She says these are Utahns. She says these are our people who they went to high school here. She says these are our native sons and daughters.
That's interesting. Want to ask Dan Yu about the special session. The governor has called a special session. What does he put on the call?
We've got, let's see, there's a few issues. One is a minor transportation enforcement issue with long-haul truckers. No one's going to care about this issue.
It's more of an administrative kind of thing.
Another one is a settlement for a lawsuit that we've had for a number, for a little while over some faulty construction down in Utah County. There's some diatribe on one side saying, well, this isn't enough money, and others saying this is too much. Anyways, it'll figure it out. It's one of those things. Remember, anyways, I'm not going to go on about that. And then the other is, the two others is funding Rio Grande initiatives and taking money from the general fund to fund hospital beds or to fund, prison beds and those kinds of things so that we are able to treat these people that we're taking in. We are now over 1,000 arrests in Operation Rio Grande. And those 1,000 arrests.
I remember when 400 seemed like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And those 1,000 arrests, because remember, one of the key elements to the criminal element is they function in anonymity, right? Mm-hmm. So as long as they're anonymous, they can continue to function. Well, the law enforcement has gotten involved. We were making a bunch of arrests, brought in now 1,000 people. Those people need places to stay. They need food. They need processing. All that stuff takes money.
And meanwhile, the ACLU sits up there on the balcony watching every move.
Waiting to see what happens. And then the other one was the closing the street in Operation Rio Grande.
Our ACLU in Utah, they're great. They're such good people, and I'm glad they're involved. That gives me a lot of a sense of security that we're going to do the right thing here.
Yeah. Dan, it's time to go to gripes. What do you want to gripe about today?
I am complaining about technology today.
Okay.
It has disappointed me yet again. I can buy a $1,000 iPhone that functions and makes phone calls and text messages just like my $1,000 iPhone did before. And what I would really, really want is I want the technology to do it for me. I want no more missed messages. I want text messages that automatically return. Look, I am absolutely tired of iterative changes in technology. Changed my life. And I know as soon as I say that, I'm totally sounding technologically spoiled. I get that.
Yeah.
But I want something more, Apple.
I think the wireless charging will be really great. But
sure.
Your gripe, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, technology, who cares? That's small bore. Let's talk about something that matters, fast food. I hate when you're in line for like 5 minutes and then the person in front of you, they get up there, they say, what's your order? Then, like, it's the first time they ever thought about it. They look up the menu, what's good? What do you recommend?
That's a great one. You know, this one's a hard one to talk about on radio, but I picked my gripe today, and I'm going to go to self-flushing toilets, which might be technology, too. But how many times, at least as a woman, you go in and the toilet flushes before you're, you know, doing whatever you
do. I consider that air conditioning.
Yeah, you flinch, whoosh.
And then when you leave, you know, it flushes again. I'm just like a water. Why wouldn't they innovate and have a flusher that's just with your foot? It takes care of all the trouble.
Crazy talk.
That's technology.
That's brilliance right there we're ending with.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Steve Urquhart, representing Jim DeBacchus on the left, and Dan McKay on the right. The program's produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.